Let's catch up with Matt Stringer, RNIB's chief executive, for our look at some of the stories coming from the charity. A couple of topics to discuss today. Thank you for joining us, Matt.
Hello, Alan. My pleasure as ever. Good to be back this week.
Now, we've got health to talk about, and we've got a transport-related discussion as well, Matt. But let's start with the NHS. We've been talking a great deal on health and the eye care support pathway, but more news on, I suppose, a greater involvement in the NHS.
Yeah, I think everyone will have seen at the Labour Party this week, over the weekend and Monday, really have launched this NHS big conversation. We will participate in that. But again, I just encourage the listeners to engage, actually, because, you know, it's an opportunity to actually put some thoughts forward. And I think, you know, there's lots there about accessible information. There's lots there about accessibility of some of the things they're developing, the NHS app, for example, which people can make some strong representations about. So we're pleased they're listening, because I think being in listening mode is a good sign for the government. It gives us more encouragement to keep pushing our agenda through our channels, and we will use this channel. I just encourage the listeners to engage with it. I think we saw some interesting, slightly facetious contributions this week, such as building a Wetherspoons in every hospital and things like that. But if you leave the facetious ones to one side, we need to get some good stuff in the mix here. So we had a meeting this week with a lady called Louisa Wickham, who's the head of Eye Health for NHS England. She came to visit us in Grimaldi in our office in London, shared around. Mary James, Rob Cooper and myself had an hour with her, chewing over where we were with the pathway. You know, with a real sense of sector collaboration, actually, across the charities, across the clinicians, as represented by Louisa, across, you know, the optometrists, across some of the corporate partners. And I think a real sense of really trying to harness that coalition now to really get some meaningful change. And I think, as I say, we've had some really good traction, and it's good they're listening. Encourage the listeners just to participate, Alan, and send their ideas through to the Labour Party.
Absolutely. It's a good time to get involved. I've seen a lot of chatter on social media around people talking about the NHS going digital, you know, perhaps to make the sharing of information amongst GPs or hospitals easier, but also that, as you mentioned, the app as well. So that throws up immediately the accessibility question, because that app could be something that we use for, or some do now actually, but perhaps to a greater extent, booking appointments, checking test results, that kind of thing.
Yeah, that's right. I mean, I think the data opportunity is enormous. I understand some people are scared of data, and clearly, if you're going down a more data digital solution versus a more analog solution, you've got to make sure you don't exclude people who don't have access to technology or don't feel facile with technology, or what is built is not accessible. Clearly, those things would not be welcome. But I think there is an opportunity across the health service, full stop, to move data around much better, understand patient data. We know in eye health, some of the challenges of, you know, you walk into a high street optician, you have your initial eye health appointment and diagnosis, materials produced, and getting that sent through to subsequent maybe phases of your journey through an eye health journey, whether that goes into primary care, secondary care, you know, into different NHS portals. It might be you go to your GP. You can understand all these pockets of data held in different sectors. We would hold some data as the RNIB if you're going through an ECLO appointment or ringing our helpline, you know. So there is an opportunity to really stitch the data together for the benefit of the patient and a more efficient process. Yes, there are downsides in terms of data risk, data security, GDPR issues, and there's downside in terms of making sure that data flow is accessible. But it is a massive opportunity. And I think the point I was making at the National COVID Inquiry a couple of weeks ago was, you know, one of the challenges actually when COVID landed in sort of 2020 was the nation didn't have those data flows and didn't actually know which pools of data were the primary pools of data to go to. So they had lots of people using different pools, GP records, local authority records, hospital records, whatever, welfare records, you know, to try and get a list of people to communicate to, and no one knew what was the best source of data, and they weren't talking to each other. So, you know, solving the data issue was a massive opportunity for the health service in this big conversation. I'm not underestimating the job, it's enormous. And if we don't do it, what do? We carry on in an analog world where people are getting letters in inaccessible formats arriving after their appointment. Now, that's not a great place to be either. So data, unlocking data is a big opportunity here. Yes, fraught with a bit of risk, but there is a great upside, Alan, if we can get on with it.
And getting sight loss further up the NHS agenda as well. I mean, I think some people feel that sight loss tends to come down the pecking order a bit, but if you think of timely interventions, you know, prevention rather than cure, saving someone's sight, financially anyway for the government, you know, it's less burden on local services, local funding, DWP, you know, a lot there if people retain their vision.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah, we're making that argument actually, A, because it's sort of so obviously common sense that the sooner you engage with someone's potential condition, then the better, the easier it might be to treat it, and the better it is for the individual involved. I mean, that seems a pretty obvious thing that no one could really argue with. I think the trick is to make the case about how you could do that. So can you actually implement something that allows you to be more at the prevention end of the spectrum, and crucially, what are the economics? At the end of the day, money talks, doesn't it? Here we are looking at budget, heavily trailed about further tax corporately and personally to fill a black hole, if you believe that, but also to invest in public services. Clearly, that money's going to get spent, and the purse strings are tightly held. And so even within a large budget, which a health budget is at about 180 billion, you've still got to make the case for why your particular thing is more worthy of investment than the other person's. And I think for us on eye health, I think we are getting traction on there is a big opportunity at the prevention end of the spectrum, working in with the health service, with high street providers, with charities, to actually really get more people seen early. And so you are doing it at a sort of cheaper end. I think there's we're sort of winning that argument with the Labour Party. I think we've all done the Association of Optometrists working with Fight for Sight, and then we have done in a complementary way quite a bit of work on health economics to really make the case about if you invest £1 over here, what do you get back? And if you invest £1 on eye health or £1 on rehabilitation after eye health, how do you get that paid back? And the answer is it's a many pounds return on the pound invested in eye health and in rehabilitation, because you're getting people back in society, you're getting them back into work, you're getting them to be active contributors to the economy. You're also, to your point, Alan, stopping further costs sort of down the line. So you're on an upside of contribution and a further upside of less cost, and it all adds up to a good return on the original investment. And eye health are high volume. We're about 10% of all the NHS waiting lists, outpatient appointments. This is not a small sector. So if you can make a dent in this, you can actually start to show a dent in the whole, really.
Indeed. Let's move from health then on to travel and transport. Something I didn't know was that now, and indeed sort of in the past, RNIB is and has worked with Motability.
Yeah, Motability are a great organisation. I mean, they're a massive organisation, actually. They have a business arm, and then they have a sort of charity arm, one funding the other. They're the biggest car provider in the UK, I think, Motability, because of all the people that need an adapted car. But a lot of that money flows through into the charity arm. And so we work with them, had a few meetings myself with their newish CEO who joined during the year. And so we've got a good personal and good corporate relationship with Motability. They see us bringing insight into tackling some of the challenges around travel and transport, around sort of getting around, which is one of our strategic priorities. We want to make the UK work better for blind and partially sighted people to travel, because the majority of people find it difficult or dangerous at the moment. And if you don't travel, you're not going to an education setting, you're not holding down a job, you're not seeing friends and family, you're not following a hobby, your life is diminished if you don't travel easily. So they see us as having a lot of insight to bear about how we can make transport systems and transport networks more accessible. And so we've been working with them, pitching various projects, what we can do to sort of do some insight into how people can move better around the country. So we're doing a variety of things with them, from looking at app development, helping people find their way into buildings and through buildings. We're doing some work with them on looking at training all staff on the railways to actually be better able to support blind and partially sighted passengers. And we know there's lots of coverage of people being stranded on trains and that sort of thing at the moment. So it's a great relationship. And actually they're being very, very generous actually to us. They're good friends and they can see the quality we bring. They put the funds in, we bring the insight. And between us, we produce a really good project. So I'm sure over the course of the next sort of year or two, we'll be coming back out and talking quite a bit about what we've been doing with Motability and some of the great insight that we can bring around travel and transport, and actually then bring that to bear in tangible activity, such as training railway staff, in essence.
Anything to do with transport, I'm very interested in. We'll definitely be catching up more on that. So if you'd like to find out more about RNIB and its services, do have a look at the website rnib.org.uk. You can also call the helpline on 0303 123 9999. And if you use your Amazon Echo device, just ask Lady A to contact RNIB's helpline. Matt, we'll catch up again next week, but thank you for joining us on RNIB Connect Radio.
Cheers, Adam. My pleasure. Look forward to seeing you next week. Bye-bye.